From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. It's Wednesday, May 27th. Today on the podcast, the Vermont real estate market is heating up.
It's a very hot market if the property is priced right.
First, here are today's headlines.
So Henry, picture this. Idling cars stretched as far as the eye can see, waiting hours for free food and supplies passed out by the National Guard. It's a scene that's become common in Vermont as the pandemic exacerbates food insecurity. Yesterday, cars clogged Burlington's Beltline from before 7 a.m. until late in the afternoon as people waited for boxes of food. Previous giveaways have attracted thousands of Vermonters, and some sites have had to turn people away. Food insecurity has risen by more than 30% in Vermont since the pandemic hit, according to a recent UVM study.
And June 1st is usually move-in day for hundreds of out-of-state college students returning to Burlington who live off campus. But this year, there's concern that the influx could also bring COVID-19. Burlington Mayor Murrow Weinberger says the city has worked with the University of Vermont to come up with mitigation plans. Students are required to quarantine for 2 weeks, and the National Guard is staffing testing sites on campus. Weinberger says the city will also offer students what he calls supportive quarantine services.
The city is going to check in with them regularly. The city is going to provide sort of a welcoming care package that has a mask, a hygiene supplies, and has some other kind of local products.
And Burlington police will also patrol areas where students live to make sure that they know about the guidelines.
And Vermont has now tested more than 30,000 people for COVID-19, identifying 967 cases. 5 new cases were confirmed on Tuesday. A total of 54 people have died, and one person with the disease is hospitalized.
And all these numbers indicate that Vermont has one of the country's lowest coronavirus infection rates. And real estate agents report a surge in interest in Vermont property from out-of-state buyers, many of them from more urban areas with higher rates of infection. And they're looking for a safe and relatively disease-free place to live. As John Dillon reports, the trend is spurred in part because a lot more people can now work from home.
To actually walk through a house you want to buy these days, you have to live here or self-quarantine for 2 weeks before you can physically check out the kitchen and the closets. So realtors are using videos like this.
This modern country estate is set nicely upon 30 rolling acres in such a way that one can enjoy views of Mount Mansfield, a Zen garden with a reflecting pond, and lush meadows, all in a single vista. Outside.
But even with the restrictions imposed to limit the spread of the coronavirus, real estate agents say they're showing more property to out-of-staters.
A definite interest, yes. People are calling and asking if they can't just drive up for the day to look at real estate.
Gail Oberg owns Little River Realty in Stowe. She says rules imposed under the state of emergency bar customers from making a day trip to shop for real estate. So she says some buyers have signed purchase contracts without seeing the property. Others who have already sheltered here for weeks or months in rental property or with friends have realized they can do their work remotely without moving back to the city.
We're seeing people that want to come here and be in a safe environment, a healthy environment, and then combining it now with the fact that they can work is going to, you know, open up a lot of Vermont to people that may come here 4 days a week. Maybe they'll move here. You know, I'm wondering if the home in Vermont doesn't become their primary and their home in the metropolitan area might be downsized and become more of a second home.
At Mad River Valley Real Estate, broker Eric Reisner has also seen an uptick in business from those seeking corona safe zones.
It's similar to the post 9/11 effect, I'll call it, you know, where we saw, you know, the number of students in our local schools rise post 9/11 due to families moving out of more metropolitan areas.
Like Oberg and Stowe, Reisner says it's hard to quantify how much of his clients' interest is due to COVID concerns. But he says he and other real estate agents in the Valley are getting a lot of calls from seasonal visitors to the resort community who now want to buy property and move here permanently.
I guess I'm making an assumption that it's the pandemic, but that's probably the driving factor. It may have been a dream for quite some time, but then what makes you go from dreaming to, you know, really looking to make the move?
For example, when we spoke last week, Reisner was getting ready to give prospective buyers from Massachusetts a virtual online tour of a place in the valley. They had decided to move to Vermont, and he says the choice was made easier by the new COVID reality of working from home.
Whether you're working from home in a suburb of a major city or if you're working from home in Vermont, you know, as long as you have good internet access, you can do it either way.
New York City, Boston, Brooklyn, Washington, D.C., all on the first page.
Stage Davis is the CEO of Four Seasons Sotheby's International Realty, which lists properties all over Vermont and New Hampshire. The firm uses software to track where the internet searches for its listings come from. Davis shares the screen via Zoom and ticks down through the list.
So you can see 757 unique visitors. Go down the page, there's Boston.
Even before the virus hit, Davis says the residential real estate market was strong because of low interest rates and low inventory.
Lower, mid, and a little above that price range, it's a very hot market if the property is priced right. And we had, I want to say, on one property last week, a dozen offers on one house.
And the COVID crisis has made Vermont even more attractive to people looking for a rural sanctuary. He says one buyer from Florida signed a seven-figure contract recently to buy a house and land in the Northeast Kingdom, sight unseen.
He's never been there. And there are numerous examples of that.
Davis also sees comparisons to the post-9/11 boom in Vermont real estate, with one exception.
After 9/11, we didn't see a lot of people fleeing urban centers. We saw people fleeing New York as much as any place. Now, you know, it's clearly New York is in there, but, we're seeing L.A., we're seeing Boston.
And he expects even more sales to out-of-state buyers once the state opens up more to visitors and agents can show customers around the property and not just give virtual tours via video of a Vermont home. For VPR News, I'm John Dillon.
And now on this podcast, we're going to talk about another one of VPR's podcasts. There's a new episode of Brave Little State out. In the latest installment of the People-Powered Journalism Show, reporter Emily Corwin looked into this question from listener Melanie Pizer.
I am wondering how advanced healthcare directives are affecting treatment and outcomes for COVID-19 patients in Vermont.
And Emily is here with us to talk about it. Hey, Emily.
Hi, guys.
So can you first start just by saying what exactly an advance directive is?
It's essentially a legal document that allows people to specify what they want at the end of their life. And they can include who do you want to be making decisions for you if you are not capable of making decisions for yourself? What kind of medical care do you want? And anyone can fill them out. Vermont does have a registry of them. And I came to understand that there's really a trend toward focusing on writing sort of open-ended questions and having conversations with your loved one about, you know, what it is that you want your life to look like and what kind of suffering you are willing to endure and are not willing to endure. And then using that information to help a doctor and help your family make decisions.
And so as you started looking into this question, Emily, about advance directives and COVID-19, what did you start to find? I mean, how were people thinking about their advance directives as the threat of this virus started to grow?
So what I discovered and was really fascinated by was this pretty unprecedented series of events at Birchwood Terrace. So Birchwood Terrace was the second nursing home in Vermont to have a big outbreak. It was the biggest outbreak in Vermont. And what happened there was early on, the facility and UVM Medical Center grasped that there were cases of COVID-19 throughout this large facility. A lot of people were going to be at risk. And they convinced or talked the head of palliative care at UVM Medical Center to come in and to bring a team of palliative care specialists into Birchwood Terrace. They literally moved in. They had an RV and two people were there overnight every night. And they talked to everyone early. So even before some people had been tested for COVID and well before many had symptoms, they were having conversations with this palliative care team about their preferences. If you get COVID, or if you get COVID and you have a, like, it goes bad, like, this is what we know about the disease. This is what we know about the likely outcomes. And ultimately, it led to a pretty interesting outcome, which is that of the 28 people who were COVID positive at this nursing home and also who had severe symptoms, so were at risk of dying, none of them decided to go to the hospital, right? They all decided they wanted to stay at their, you know, home, which was this nursing home. And, you know, 20 of them ended up passing away at the nursing home. And so it's really clear that in Vermont, there was a really exerted effort to give people access to professionals to discuss this, and that it may have made a difference in their decision making.
So Emily, after reporting on and thinking about end-of-life decisions and end-of-life care and what that looks like during the time of COVID-19, what are you still thinking about? What's still on your mind?
I mean, it was definitely a learning experience for me to really grasp sort of how complex and evolved and humane the field of palliative care is, especially when it comes to end-of-life decision-making. And it also, I mean, one little tidbit that seems interesting to me is that, first of all, a lot of the specialists I talked to in researching this told me they had rewritten their end-of-life directives when they knew that they would be working with COVID patients. And then the manager of health statistics for the Department of Health told me that the number of people in Vermont who have registered their advanced directives is markedly up in 2020 so far compared to the year before. So it just seems like this pandemic has made people stop and think about what they want, you know, in the really unlikely and unfortunate case that they might die, even if they're not sort of in that population that might otherwise be, you know, thinking about their advanced directives and their end-of-life decisions.
That's VPR's Emily Corwin. You can listen to the whole Brave Little State story wherever you get your podcasts. Look for Brave Little State or go to bravelittlestate.org. Emily, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Now a look at the Eye in the Sky forecast today. Hot and sunny, highs from the mid-80s to around 90. Thanks for listening to The Frequency. We had reporting today from Emily Corwin, John Dillon, Liam Elder Connors, Amy Kolb-Noyes, and Sam Gail Rosen.
Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.